Yeah. Well, and of course, if anybody has a question about computers, any sort of question at all, just send them in, and I'll do my best to answer and see what we can do. And remember, also, if you want to get a message in that a question in about computers, you can always send a message to techtalk@futureradio.co.uk, and they will get to me even when I'm not in the studio, and so we can answer them later on in the year, or maybe if it's very, very easy, I can even answer them by email, but I cannot necessarily promise that on a regular basis. But I haven't had any messages yet, so right now there's a lot of open space and a lot of open potential for people to ask and have their questions answered.
That's actually a really good service. I think Future Radio should be very grateful to you for that, because, I mean, if you go into one of the big, you know, department stores or, you know, those IT stores, whatever they're called, we're trying not to mention names here, but, you know, the big ones that sell computers, and then once they've sold them to you, they get no backup service, or if you do, it's 50 quid for a sort of, you know, a less than excited communication with somebody. Often this is the case, but it would be great. So if people want to find out about...
If it's a simple question, I mean, a lot of questions you literally need to be at the person's computer to be able to answer. But sometimes it's surprising how often an intractably a question that seems intractable has a very simple solution. And so, you know, try us out and we'll see what we can do.
I'm interested to find out about the hackers as well, because, you know, you're saying about hacking and all this stuff, and I've always thought that's something very negative, but apparently not.
Not at all. We could not, the internet as we know it would not exist without hackers. Hackers are kind of, I'm going to use a very strange metaphor, but they're kind of like worms and insects and spiders, you know, things we don't like, because sometimes they bite us. But in fact, without them, our environment wouldn't be the same. You know, spiders get rid of some of the bad insects. Worms clean our earth. So hackers are kind of that sort of a beneficial but often ugly-looking influence that we have on, you know, that we can find on the internet. So I certainly want to talk about that, because it's at heart it is a positive term. It should be a positive term. Hackers certainly are responsible for some of the bad things, like, you know, stealing your bank data and stuff like that, and, you know, sending out all these worms that roam the internet and infect people's computers. But that is really just what is called the malicious hackers, the real, you know, the real hackers that go all the way back to the, you know, to the original times of the internet. I mean, those are the good guys. I mean, those are the guys who are trying to figure things out. I mean, basically, that's what it originally meant, is somebody who looks at a piece of technology and says, what else could I make it do?
Right,
and it usually
right.
turns out it's something good and interesting and fun. And it isn't just computers, it's phones. And that's how the hacker movement kind of got started with the, it was called freaking, PH, starting with PH. And, you know, people were sort of hacking into phones and seeing what the phone system can do and whistling different tones in them and seeing the responses and stuff like that. And, you know, and sometimes they used it to get free international calls, but sometimes they used it to discover a massive hole in the system. So, certainly, you know, it certainly is a good way to think about hackers as somebody who can definitely help you, even though sometimes they're just something you have to put up with.
Yeah. So did it actually derive the word hacker? Was that actually a positive to begin with?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are many people around the world right now who call themselves hackers. You'll say to your face, "I am a hacker." I was actually just in Barcelona a couple of weeks ago. I was talking about it here. At a computer conference, I met this guy, and I asked him, "What do you do?" And said, "Oh, I'm an old hacker." And I immediately, I just kind of warmed to him, because I knew this is a guy who thinks about computers and, you know, I mean, who thinks about technology, not just in the context of, you know, typing up a Word document. What can they do? And very often they're involved politically. So what can, you know, so they're thinking about what can they do for society? And those are the people, some of the hacker manifestos or some of the big hacker novels that are out there, like the Neal Stephenson's Snow Crash and some of his other books. They actually depict hackers as the people who can save the universe. I mean, so it's certainly, it certainly is not a negative term, essentially. Except when you turn on the main, the main news outlets of the main media, and then you hear all the horror stories. But very often those are overblown, misrepresented, and not quite well understood.
Well, that will be an eye-opener to talk about that in the program as well. I remember when I was very young, you remember Rubik's Cubes?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I could never finish one off. So my father said to me, part of my home education program, as he put me through for 11 years of basically escaping all things education, he said, "Well, why don't you take it apart and see how quickly you can put it back together?" And so I ripped this Rubik's Cube apart and used to, you know, sort of have competitions with myself with a timer on as to how quickly you could put it back together. And then I got down to about a minute and a half, and it wasn't the right way to do it, but it was maybe I was hacking at a young age.
Absolutely, you were being a hacker. Well, the thing is, that has become, because people on the internet, people who sort of are on the cutting edge of the internet. And that very often isn't just technology, it is ideas on the, you know, like how differently how to communicate, what to say, and how to get your ideas noticed and things like that. People like that know what hackers are, and they know that they're basically a good, you know, good influence, on, you know, except when they turn malicious and they become the black hat hackers as opposed to the white hat hackers. But they know that. So there has spread a whole movement of hacker, extending the word hacker to other things that are not computers. So there is a website, a wonderful website I go to every day. It's called lifehacker.com. And that is a website that that focuses a lot on computers, but also on life hacks, like how to hack your memory, how to, and in the sense, I mean, when you say hack here, how to sort of use something common sense and daily, everyday in your life to help you make your life better. You know, so it talks about how to hack your sleep and things like that.
Wow.
There is a website called parenthacks.com that helps you how to hack your children. You know, different tips about how to deal with your kids and your teenager, from teenagers to infants. And, you know, of course, it doesn't mean you're going to take a screwdriver to your child, you know, but it just means that it's how do you, you know, take the behavior of a child and how do you sort of plug it into the into the world of your family and things like that.
Yeah, so it's breaking the mold. It's kind of it's finding out how to how to change your life in a positive way.
Yes, and finally, there's I even found a thing called palate hacking, which is basically a cooking, you know, the ways of tricking your palate to enjoy your food. So, and yeah, I mean, you can say it's how is it different from your sort of the usual sort of tips and how-to books.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it is different. It is different in the sense of a mindset that you're saying. Well, it's usually for the better and for good.
Yeah.
And it is very often with the intention of making the world better.
Yeah.
Through not necessarily technology, but through sort of taking what we know and take for granted and using it, subverting it somehow and using it slightly differently.
Well, when I was at this concert last night with Tom Baxter, who we shall play a track from later, it was an amazing concert, it really was. He was talking to me in an interview I did for Platform for the show in a couple of weeks on Sunday on Future Radio. He was saying that, you know, life is all about stripping away all the stuff that really is not needed and all the rubbish that's there. And then you get down to what really matters. And that's what he's striving to do. And that's what he's doing with his music and so on and so forth. And so maybe, you know, you should be a life hacker.
Yes.
Not, you know, maybe you could set up a business like that. We've had life coaches and things. Maybe,
yes.
maybe
yeah.
move, because yeah. you're bringing it from a different perspective. Yeah. Aren't
Absolutely.
You?
And I would go to a life hacker over a life coach anytime.
Would
but
you?
That's just because I know, you know, I have the ethos in my head. I mean,
right.
Let me give you a great. I mean, sometimes it's very funny. There was a hacker conference in Holland 2 years ago, and I didn't go to it. I'm not really a hacker. I just kind of follow the scene a little bit.
Mm.
And they have one of the things they were trying to put forward is the idea is that a lot of the airport security is really just for our own sort of peace of mind rather than any real sort of deterrent to people who want to do the airplanes harm.
Right.
And so what they did, they set up an X-ray scanner at the entrance of the hacker camp, and with a big notice, well, if you feel in danger of an attack, why don't you scan your own luggage to feel at peace? so they often go to elaborate lengths, you know, to just kind of show the technology and use it in kind of a strange way. So,
right.
So basically say, well, because, you know, X-rays at airports are mostly for the peace of mind of the passengers rather than real deterrent. Why don't you just do yourself some good and scan your own luggage?
Well, absolutely. Maybe we could scan ourselves every time we get out of bed in the mornings. You
yes.
know? Today's going to be a good day.
Yes. This half hour, we'll be talking about hackers a bit more and hacking and computers and simply the world of the online and the digital. And but before we do that, let's listen to a particularly interesting song by Jonathan Colton that's called Code Monkey.
Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey, very diligent, but his output stink. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think? Code Monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page. Code Monkey not say it out loud. Code Monkey not crazy, just proud. Code Monkey like Fritos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man with big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. shop and buy you soda. Bring you cup, bring you ice. You say no thank you for the soda, cause soda make you fat. Anyway, you busy with the telephone, no time for chat. Code Monkey have long walk back to cubicle. He sit down, pretend to work. Code Monkey not thinking so straight. Code Monkey not feeling so great. Code Monkey like Fritos. Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man. Big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Coffee cake, take bath, take nap. This job fulfilling in creative way, such a load of crap. Code Monkey thinks someday he have everything, even pretty girl like you. Code Monkey just waiting for now. Code Monkey says someday, somehow. Code Monkey likes Fritos. Code Monkey likes Tab and Mountain Dew. Code Monkey very simple man. Big warm fuzzy secret heart. Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey like you.
Well, right, that was Jonathan Colton with Code Monkey, and that's a particularly interesting track about programmers who are sort of locked away in a cubicle and have to just kind of be at the beck and call of managers who don't quite often know how the technology works.
Right.
And
right.
So it's a very popular song among the hacking community and, well, basically the geek community in general.
So at the geek disco, annual disco, that gets played.
Yes, absolutely. And, well, the interesting thing about Jonathan Colton is he did something called a song a week, and on his website, he every week for a year he published a song that was available for free, and now he's released them out on a CD, so you can buy, you know, go to the website and buy a CD.
Right.
So it's definitely, you know, good stuff that he puts out. It's very often so humorous and funny and but, you know, good music as well.
Mm. What's your take on all the business of being able to download so much for free these days in terms of songwriters and singers and things like that? It's obviously happening. Is it a good thing?
I think it's probably a good thing for, and it turns out it usually is a good thing for the songwriters and singers as well, because that's the best way to get out there, you know, just to give something away for free. And that's basically what MySpace is all about. You know, there's lots of free tracks that people can just play and find out about the band and then maybe buy a CD or at least go to concert. And there's kind of the misconception that a lot of the artists make a lot of money on CDs, but when you're with a record company, you actually make not that much money unless you're selling millions of discs.
Right. Right, and, so maybe it's actually freeing up the artist to...
In many ways, it might be. Yeah. I mean, it depends on who you are, and, you know, different artists have different views on how that works. You know, Metallica has gone very against the downloads, whereas, like band like Nine Inch Nails or Bare Naked Ladies, you know, they're just giving it away, or if they're selling it as well, but very often they're also giving it away or giving away a track for remixing and things like that. You know, so they're trying different ways, and very often, you know, the bands who are sort of nice to their fans... They often get the loyalty and they prosper. You just remember Grateful Dead. You know, there was a band that was known for allowing all their fans to tape all the concerts as much as they liked. And, look at them. You know, they have sort of massive cult following.
Yeah.
Even after they've dissolved, and it's still a very profitable enterprise for them in many ways, even though you can go to archive.org and get the entire, well, not entire, but lots and lots of taped sessions of the Grateful Dead online for free.
Mm-hmm. It's good to talk to you about it because, you know, it's for me, kind of getting rid of the phobia of the unknown with the technical world that is out there. And obviously there's a whole new generation who get taught about it from a very young age. But for the kind of the middle person, the 40-somethings like myself, you know, there's that kind of, you want to reach out and you want to get to know it, but yet you're kind of worried about every time you turn on your computer, Norton antivirus, you know, subscribe again now or your life falls apart, you know. It's kind of, but one shouldn't be afraid, should one, I guess?
Well, no, I mean, it's what is the worst that can happen? You know, I mean, if you're just going to be, you know, take good care of your credit card number and your bank information and the worst and the, you know, and back up your data regularly, and then and after that the worst that can happen, somebody will delete your hard drive.
Right.
But the change that has gone in the virus world is that most of the viruses, they don't actually do much harm to your computer except they slow it down perhaps, but they usually try to co-opt your computer so that they can send emails out, spam. So that, you know, so you're basically sending spam without realizing it. And, you know, so it's kind of a, so keeping your computer healthy and virus free these days is mostly a matter of kind of a social conscience rather than necessarily a personal harm, because it, I was just reading yesterday that actually, you know, the theft of credit cards through a virus is, not that great, a threat, because apparently it's just not that profitable for the, you know, for the malicious hackers and the, you know, the bad guys.
Right. Right. So, yeah, it's on the turn then. So things are definitely clearing up.
Well, I wouldn't say they're clearing up, because there's always going to be this, there's always going to be this, sort of environment where people will, you know, try to profit by, outwitting the unsuspecting public in one way or another.
The darker forces always have the larger army, don't they?
Because they're always ahead of you. You know, I mean, you can sort of plug one hole and then they're already looking for another one.
Yeah.
So the nice thing, to get to the subject of hackers, I mean, the one thing that's very interesting about this, a lot of the viruses and the break-ins and all of that is not necessarily done through technology or through some sort of, well, technology plays a big role, and you need to know your way around the command line. But a lot of it depends on what's called social engineering. And so that, you know, tricking people into doing something because they think that's the right thing to do, or because it's interesting, because they're, you know, so very often it's just, or because they think you're an authority, you know, so very often it is not, your computer actually is pretty well protected, but you just do something stupid, or very often not stupid. I run a website that has a listing of Czech teachers. It's called bohemica.com. It has information about Czech language, Czech culture, and also lists a lot of language teachers, put their addresses on there. Mm. And I have my own as well, just to see if anybody's interested in a Czech course. And I got this email from somebody about a year ago saying, well, you know, I'm coming to Norwich and my son really wants to learn Czech, you know, so can we do, can we arrange a course? I said, yeah, sure, great. You know, I gave them my rates and everything. And then he said, well, but I'd like to pay it all up in advance. And just, can you give me your bank account information so I can deposit the money there? And the minute that came up, I knew, no, that is a scam.
Right.
You know, it was just too good to be true. So remember, if it's too good to be true.
Yeah.
Then don't go for it. So very often, you know, there's a Nigerian scam and somebody's, you know, like a son of a deposed king, you know, asking you to help him deposit $20 million or something like that. Well, you know immediately that is a scam, except you would think. Lots of people don't. Lots of people fall for it.
Yeah. Do they really fall for it?
I don't know why, but absolutely they do.
Right.
And otherwise they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I guess.
You just need that sort of 1%, you know, 1% of a percent of a percent of the gullible, and then you'll make your money.
Mm.
And, you know, so again, that's social engineering. You're not actually clicking. You're not actually sort of, somebody's not breaking into a computer in this mysterious way, you know, that they can do anything. You know, if you saw the latest Die Hard, you know, there was this idea that they can just going to take over a computer in any way they like.
Mm.
But in fact, that is not the case. Very often they just need to go and call somebody up and say, this is the computer administrator, and we have some problem with your computer. Could you tell us your password? Well, if you're an office worker,
yeah,
who doesn't really understand how these things work, well, that sounds perfectly credible, right? That sounds like the sort of thing that just might happen. Well, remember, if you're an office worker, that should never happen. Your tech administrator should never, ever need to know your password for anything.
Right.
I could sort of imagine maybe, but basically, always say no. Because that usually, 9 times out of 10, it's somebody trying to break into your company's computer system.
Right.
And that's a good way of getting it, you know, just getting in because somebody was too trusting. And that, you know, you can't even say gullible in this sense. Maybe they didn't receive the right training or something, but that's, you know, so... So again, social engineering is you know, 90, but it's a big chunk of the hacking, you know, of people who want to hack for malicious purposes.
Right. Right. And I guess the ones you have to really watch out for are the ones who don't talk about the £20 million investment you can make in another country, but it's the smaller stories,
yes,
the more discreet ones.
Be very careful. I mean, don't, and you know, and these people often, they don't use any technology at all. They just use, you know, just use this simple social engineering. And of course, there are the white hat hackers, the good guys, who very often go and respond to these Nigerian scams.
Right.
And
I must get you a white hat. I'd like to see you in a white hat. I think it'd be really a sort of nightcap thing.
I would like that.
I'll see if I can get one made.
but these guys basically string these scammers along.
Right.
And they, you know, and they say, oh, okay, well, sorry, I couldn't get my account ready for the, you know, could you do this? And they, some of them are asking the hackers to post, send them pictures of themselves dancing or some ridiculous sort of stuff that, you know, that happens. And the hacker, you know, so people are sort of responding back in that way,
yeah,
very often.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that does sound good. But do you belong to a sort of a hackers club or anything?
No,
do you have
no,
membership
I
mean, for
as
hackers?
As I said earlier, I don't consider myself a hacker because I'm just not good enough. But I can follow the community because I like the ideas that come from it, and I just kind of like to know. And I don't want to be necessarily guided by the scaremongering of the media,
right,
about, you know, about the sort of all powerful hackers who can do anything, which is definitely not the case.
So yeah. how do you see the future technically in terms of, you know, is it going to be iRobot? Is it going to be, you know, what they say it's going to be in the next 50 years? You know?
No, absolutely not. I mean, actually, that's one of the things that I have a bit of expertise in, because I've worked in cognitive linguistics and I sort of looked at artificial intelligence a little bit. And I was recently at a conference on cognitive linguistics, and I talked to some AI artificial intelligence people, and they said most of this is just just going to misplace expectations. I mean, it's not going to come anytime soon. We don't quite have the right model for iRobot yet. So I wouldn't worry about that.
Right.
It is most of this stuff is happening through social engineering. So actually, interestingly enough, if you do a test and you put some people behind a sort of a blind screen, they often cannot tell whether the person talking back to them is a computer or a real person, not because the computer is particularly good, but because they're very bad at distinguishing between the two.
So if I press this button here, what happens to you if I press this button?
I just go like that and start talking. Because you have revealed my true robot nature.
This is true. Yes. Does he bleed? We think not. He's got metal in there.
Okay, so we were talking about the hackers, and you had a question.
Well, I did, really, because, you know, there you are telling me all about it, and I feel rather excluded, actually. I'd like to know, you know, could I become a hacker?
Well, yes, you could.
How would I do that?
You can actually become a hacker very simply. Just basically pay attention to technology. You know, I mean, you can subscribe to websites like, you know, like the Live Hacker that I told you about. There's lots of sort of interesting ideas for computers, but also about, you know, about life. So you're just going to think of, have a hacker mindset. But so don't be afraid of computers. Just say, okay, what happens if I do this? And just, you know, just accept the possibility. Sometimes you may do something that, you know, delete your important files. But yeah, well, then that is life. Life sometimes brings losses and gains.
What the hack?
What the hack? Absolutely. Yeah. Well, funnily enough, that's what the conference I was telling you about earlier that was in Holland was actually called What the Hack.
Oh, was it? Yes. Is he on there already? I should be designing the T-shirt.
Yes, yeah. You should. So here, let me tell you one good way of becoming a hacker, one hacker trick. And it's not really a hacker trick, but it's called something called URL hacking. Do you know what URLs are?
No.
You know what web addresses are.
I do.
So URL is a web address. It stands for Uniform Resource Locator, but, you know, who needs to know that? But very often people say the URL of my website is, you know, for me, it's dominiklukesh.net.
Right.
Do you have a website?
I do. But, I mean, your domain holder or something?
That's the domain name is the URL. That's what it's called.
So I'm a .com, so that would be...
So you're stashkerbride.com,
yeah,
right?
You know, so that would be the domain.
So that's a domain name. That's the URL.
Right.
And you see that at the top of your browser in what's called the address field or address bar.
Right.
Right. That's what you have. That's where you type it in and that's where you see it.
Right.
Well, one thing that people do not do, and that actually very often that's one of the big problems, is that they don't pay attention to what is in there. But that's actually very important. Very often, some of these malicious websites like do something that's called a phishing scam. And what they do is they present your website like it looks just like eBay or just like PayPal. And they ask you to type in the password. But in fact, if you look at the URL, the address, it says something like, you know, ebay.com dot, you know, evilhackers.net. Well, it does never say evil hackers, but it says something else, or some
right,
numbers.
Right, right.
And then you must remember that anything up to the first slash is part of the main URL. So unless the website address ends in paypal.com/something else, you know you're not on a PayPal website, right? So the .com always has to be the last thing, and the thing before it is the last thing. So be careful. Watch what's in there. And, you know, and that way you can prevent a lot of the phishing attacks that are happening, the PIH, you know, the PHISH, you know, fish in a way that people are pretending to be somebody else and they're getting your, you know, your contact information and your passwords.
Right.
So that, you know, so that's not the hacking yet, but that's something you need to be aware of. Already, if you start paying attention every time you go to the website, look at what the URL is, what the website is, and that way you can already sort of have the right mindset for it.
So you don't, it doesn't have to be something you've got to be, again, be afraid of particularly. You just think, okay, every time I go to a website, I just have that little check, and then before I subscribe to it or whatever, it's the real deal.
Yeah, but very often, a legitimate website redirects you to a different URL because they have a different server with different services, and you may not even notice it. So for instance, if you go to futureradio.co.uk/platform, it will take you to a very different, very complicated address that actually platform lives on. Right. So we're not trying to scam you or anything. We're just going to make life easier for people to remember the URL and just going to, and it forwards it to somewhere else. So, but if you pay close attention, you can see that.
Right.
And
right.
Now, if you do that, very often you come to a website, to an address, to a page that doesn't have anything on it. Or that's expired. And if you look at the URL, at the address, sometimes you can, now we're getting to the hacking part, you can change something that would make sense to you. So for instance, you would have, you know, futureradio.co.uk/shows/podcast/platform, blah, blah, you know, 95555. And so, well, platform 95555 isn't on there anymore. But I wonder if there's something on the platform side, you know, say radios, futureradio.co.uk/shows/platform. So you delete everything after platform, hit enter, and see if something's there. If nothing is there, then you can just go delete the platform and just have shows and see if there's a listing. So very often you can get to content that's difficult to find just basically by hacking the URL.
Right.
And if you're even more careful, you can sometimes see little bits of information there, like somebody's name or let's say you're listening to a song and there's a number in there, like, you know, Wilson Pickett 1. And then if you replace the 1 with a 2, all of a sudden, oh, I'm in Wilson Pickett 2 instead of, you know, because maybe sometimes the website creator forgot to put a link and things like that. So that's a good way of sort of just kind of hacking your life to, you know, sort of enjoying your online experience more because you're aware of this one little trick.
So that if you pay attention to the details, it's going to be a better journey.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I often say that using computers is like driving a car. You need to look left, right, check your indicators, check your lights, check your speed. It's not, you know, some people are wondering why has this bad thing happened to me. It's because you weren't paying attention.
That's interesting. It is very interesting, actually.
And there's so many things that the computer is in a way more powerful than a car, you know, you can get, particularly if you're online. Mm. So why shouldn't you spend at least as much time trying to learn about the computer as you're trying to learn about your car? Mm. So it's kind of, you know, so that kind of a thing, I think people definitely should pay more attention. So the computers are complicated, but they're not that complicated. You can easily learn it, but you have to put in some effort.
Mm. That's actually very, very eye-opening, that is, because you've got to almost respect it, really, I suppose, and then it's going to treat you better, isn't it,
right.
Really? So I will look at my computer with a different... I'll do some training with it.
Okay, well, now let me show you a particular URL hack that's a little more advanced. Well, it's not really advanced. It's just something that you usually don't come up with on your own. You have to read about it somewhere. So very often these hacks, somebody tells you, well, if you do this, then you'll get something, you know, something interesting. Because very often many websites try to hide a feature just by not having a link to it anywhere. But if you know the URL, you can go to it even without the link. So sometimes you can just try it and see if something is there. And very often people do that. Now, here's a great little hack for Google. You know that on Google you can search images, right?
Right.
So if you go to google.co.uk and click on images and type in Norwich in, then you will see you get all these pictures of Norwich, right?
Right, yeah, I see those there. We've got this up on the screen. This,
yes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so you see a cathedral, you can see an air view, a map, and all of these things.
Yeah.
Now, if you go to the URL...
is that...
So you see at the end...
I thought it was a garden centre. No, it's the forum. Sorry.
At the top, you have the URL.
Having a dig at the design of the forum there. I have issues with it.
But at the top, you see the URL, and it ends like... You know, it's very complicated. It's like ampersand images question mark HL equals EN ampersand G equals NorH and all of these things, right?
Yeah.
So if you go to that URL and change it... I actually prepared it here somewhere else... Change the end of it, add an ampersand, and type in img type as an image type, img type equals face. You get this. Look at that. What do you see on the screen?
I see lots of faces.
Lots of faces. And all of these are faces related to NorH in one way or another.
No, seriously. By one change.
Just by one change. So Google has this little feature that they haven't enabled for everybody yet.
Is that the leather man from the market down on the right?
I have
He's not actually leather, but I think he deals in leather.
I have no idea. It's possible.
I think I recognize him. It's on the other side of the studio, so I can't see. How amazing.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. And knowledge is power, isn't it?
Yes, really? Absolutely. This is a little hack that, for instance, if you're searching for... You know, if you want to do a blog post or something, or you're doing a poster, you want to have a face that's related to somebody, just go to add this a little bit to the URL, and then there you go.
Okay, take us through that again, because that sort of went over me, but I want to make sure that the listeners can, because it looks like a really good tip.
You go to Google, click on images, and search for NorH.
Okay.
Right? Then what you end up, and look at the address right now, and you see a long string of letters. It's like images, question mark, HL. Equals EN, ampersand G equals NorH.
And that's all the stuff you kind of forget and think that's all just gibberish.
But a lot of it actually isn't. A lot of it is useless. So for instance, if you wanted to change in the address, if you change NorH to Ipswich, you would get Ipswich.
Yeah.
You know, so but why would you do that since you can do it in the search field? But here's a little trick, right? But then at the very end, you add another ampersand as an AND, right? Mm-hmm. Image type, IMG type. So I want to see NorH and all of these other parameters that I don't really care about, like we're in the UK.
Right.
NorH, ampersand, image, IMG, it's at the very end, ampersand as an and, IMG type, one word, equals face.
Right. Okay.
And then you hit that and you get a list of faces.
That's really good. That's really good. So it kind of opens up another dimension.
Yeah. And this is not the only URL hack. I mean, there are many, many of them that certainly people can do. For instance, when you're sending people an email, you often send people Amazon links. I don't know if you do that very often. But if you want to send some information about a book to somebody, you know, you send an Amazon link.
Yeah.
And if you cut off everything after the name of the book, then you can send a much shorter link rather than this long, long link with lots of numbers. But at the end, the numbers are, you know, extraneous. You don't need them, so you can just cut them out and send somebody a nice short link rather than this long, long list of numbers that takes up three lines in the email.
Right.
So lots of URL hacks out there that I think are very beneficial to the world outside. Learn them, love them, and they'll be on the website after this afternoon.
Fantastic. Really good. Very enlightening.
Future Radio 96.9.